We Treaty People is a production of Burnt Thicket Theater.
Support our work with a donation and learn more about the artists at burntthicket.com.
What does it mean to live together?
And check out our website or the episode description for links to other great learning resources.
Special thanks to the Canada Council for making this project possible.
And to our season sponsors, Surecom Industries and SK Arts. This work was gratefully created on Treaty 6 territory and on the traditional homeland of the Métis.
Burnt Thicket Theatre presents
We Treaty People.
Audio dramas exploring what it means to embrace all our relations.
Welcome back for our conversation with the artists from last episode.
Land.
My name is Yvette Nolan, and I'm the production dramaturge for We Treaty People.
My name is Stephen Walschmidt. I'm the artistic director of Burnt Thicket Theatre. Part of my personal journey in recent years has been about learning to see the history of Canada from Indigenous perspectives and unlearning cultural assumptions and practices I've received in my Eurocentric heritage. Of course, this learning and unlearning are ongoing.
As a company, Burnt Thicket is seeking to respond to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's Call to Action Number 83. To support good ways for Indigenous and non-Indigenous artists to collaborate in making theater that contributes to reconciliation in these lands called Canada.
In our live shows after curtain call, we encourage audiences and artists to engage with each other, with the story, and with their real lives outside the theater.
Given that these are digital performances, we hope this conversation with the artists will expand your reflection about the play.
We'd like to invite you to learn more. Check out the resources and suggestions in the episode description and our website.
We encourage you to talk about the play with your friends, to chat with us on Facebook, or in our virtual talkbacks on Zoom.
Or by leaving a response on our website. We want to hear what you think. And now, recorded on Treaty 6 territory, we bring you a conversation with the artists from Land.
Well, again, thanks everybody. This is fun, and this is the final recording, and it's been really great to be doing this. We've really enjoyed the project, but to focus on this script and this production we just did, I'm just going to welcome everybody to introduce themselves and what your role was in this audio play, and we'll go this way. I'll start by introducing myself. I'm Tim Bratton, and I was the recorder and sound designer for this show.
I'm Lancelot Knight, and I read for Benjamin.
Oh, my name's Ken McLeod, and I was the director.
I'm Stephen Walschmidt, and I'm the playwright.
I'm Abby Thiessen, and I was Melissa, the farmer.
I'm Louise Happ. My role was to play the Nukum, which is my grandmother, Gukum, which means your grandmother, the voice behind the grandma.
I'm Julissa Campos, and I was the stage manager.
I'm Kent Allen. I played Albert, the tall, handsome person in this radio play.
It's great here.
Well, thanks, everybody. And here we're going to ask a question just to start us off, and it's a question that we'll all answer here and that we'll invite people who are listening to think of for themselves. And it's this. What surprised you as you experienced this play, Land? Or is there a line or an image from the play that's stuck with you?
What surprised me was the respect that Stephen took and the knowledge that he gave out to really actually break down what treaty rights are. Because you often are part of Indigenous plays, and when they're written by the majority, there's a lot of like blank spots, but I could tell that Stephen really took this serious and brought knowledge to this play. And I'm always surprised when I see someone come with something with such respect. There was something else, but I forgot it.
We can come back around to some of ours. We don't have to go in order.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Ken, we're looking at you.
There's one word in this piece that, and it has occurred before when I hear story. It means I think for many, there's a beginning, middle, and end. We've come to think of stories as very confined sorts of things. But when we refer to story in a play like this, the story is ongoing. It goes way into the past, and it goes way into the future. And I think we sort of have to look at that word in terms of the relationship in an entirely different way than we are perhaps habitually accustomed to. So that I find that very fascinating.
It's, yeah, to touch on that, I mean, because the past and the future are basically the same thing. If you look at like where we are now, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, it's what this whole concept of the play is it's about, to me, how these things have been hidden. And like you said, it's all one thing. Mm-hmm.
And it's how we think of it and how we need to re-examine the process of thinking about story and how we're involved in the story, personally involved in the story.
Something that, to go in a slightly different direction, for me, I was involved with this piece a little bit further back, which is I got to sort of witness a few different drafts of this story as it was coming forward, and a curiosity in that sort of it being an educational tool, and as story was woven out of that to really find relationships. So I mean, I think it's I hope it's fair to say in earlier drafts it was really it was educational, and the voices felt like they were teaching you something specifically, and then through some drafts and some conversations, it really started to just be what felt like a more natural conversation between actual humans as they could speak their minds and educate in a way through story. And I say that in my experiences with some elders and elders' teachings is that it wasn't about a lesson, it was about a story, and that the onus is on the hearer to hear the lesson in the story. And I think that's something that was achieved through the process of this show, is that now the lesson can be heard in the story, rather than you going, ugh, a lesson. That was me putting my head back onto the couch and using disdain. I'm an audio actor. Ugh.
Missed out visually. No, you're right on that sense of like it like the first drafts. It like I think I made a comment of like it came down to like it almost felt like when Cookham came to talk about the treaty rights, it kind of felt like it was like sit down, put your hand up, raise. This is an education thing, mm-hmm. and it really speaks to the talent of Stephen for him to take those really important things about the treaty rights. That they are not contracts, they're actually the law of this land, you know? And if anything you missed is like it's the thing that no one understands is that every non-Indigenous person is treaty. Everybody in Canada is treaty. We're all treaty. And the problematic part about that is I have to have a card. Mm-hmm. I am assigned a number, it's just not tattooed on me. Mm-hmm. But it is law, and he brings up some very good points of the Indian Act. Right now, there's this movement going on of burn the Indian Act. And when I read that line, and when you said, when Cookham says, no, that's the only thing protecting us.
You know, that would be an interesting exploration, because what I hear from the community is get rid of the Indian Act because it's so patriarchal and very colonized of the people. So, but I'm intrigued.
For me, it was very educational. Like I didn't know about the crown owning the land or about anything. The treaty. As someone who immigrated here, it's just everything is just so new, and I'm every day I'm learning. I'm trying to understand more about the history, because we have history too, but it's different. Our relationship with Indigenous people is slightly bit different than the way it is here in Canada. So, yeah, I really learned a lot, and I like the fact that you said, Canada, it's a story, educational story. I didn't feel like I was being taught, but I felt like I learned from the story that you created.
I think this is a good point then to get Steve now for you to say, okay, well, what was the inspiration? And I know kind of the answer to this, but what was your inspiration for writing this script?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I need to make a disclaimer because I have a long and like tumultuous relationship with theater that wants to educate, and you can create propaganda and you can do that for all sorts of, you know, I don't know.
Questionable reasons?
Questionable reasons, right. Yeah, like using art as a tool is really fraught and not helpful. But as we've been working on this We Treaty People project, been on a learning journey myself, like personally, but particularly with this audio series project, I wanted to, like, what else can I learn so I can be more respectful and less ignorant in working with my Indigenous friends and fellow artists? And trying to anticipate what are the we're all treaty people, but yeah, what about this? I want to learn how to respond to friends and family members who maybe don't see things the way I do. And last fall, my father-in-law put me onto this book by Bob Joseph called 21 Things You May Not Know About the Indian Act, which was really eye-opening for me, and particularly the details about the Crown actually owning reserve land, and why can't we just get rid of the Indian Act, and some of those specifics. And then happened to have a chance to listen to Ray Aldred, who's a Northern Cree elder and professor at UBC's Vancouver School of Theology. And just experiencing his teaching about Indigenous culture and its relationship with European descent cultures and even with Christianity. He taught about treaty as an adoption ceremony, and the familial, like the now we're all family, the way he talked about that just kind of, well, it inspired me, but it also was like, oh, cool, that's sort of what we want to, like, poke at with this series, and brought that to Yvette and to Tim, and was like, this is so cool. What if we had a script like this, you know? And in that conversation, Tim and Yvette kind of said, I think you need to write that, Steve. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not really a playwright. I mean, I used to dabble in it. I mean, you know, they're like, no, I think you... Why don't we'll be, you know, at the table with you dramaturgically, and then we brought Ken into it too, and Yvette said, you know, as the artistic director helping to produce this series, it's great to make space for all these other voices that aren't necessarily like within the staff or whatever, but what are we saying? Or like, Stephen, what do you want to say? You know, and you need some skin in the game. Mm-hmm. So it's a bigger project and longer process than I think I anticipated, and certainly the earlier drafts felt a lot more educational. Throw your head back. Didactic. But I just really appreciate like everybody's input in helping the script become a story rather than an educational piece, you know, and including the cast, because I mean the rehearsals have been script workshops too, and everybody's feedback has been really helpful and collaborative.
I want to move on and ask our next question. I'm going to ask it with the addendum right built into it, and it's this. It's an important question we've asked every group of artists that's joined us in the circle. And it's this question of how are you connected to the land and to the communities around you? And I'm just going to ask it this way. You might also want to go further and say, well, this is how I could be better connected. So how are you connected to the land, to communities around you, and is there a way that you could be doing that better?
That's a difficult, that first part of that question is really difficult. Mm-hmm. Connection to the land, because we don't walk on it very much anymore. we don't have contact with it in the way that when we if we want to speak of the land with any authority, we need to have a better concept of what that means and how we relate to it. And I, that's the big piece for me. It's like, I just walk on sidewalks, you know. So, not very good. Right. The connection's not very close.
Yeah.
Or it's even not even close. It's removed. It's yeah. it's we're sort of prevented from accessing the rhythms of the land.
It's a good observation.
See, my relationship with the land is very different. My parents still farm, so there's an inherent depth in it. I helped my mom in the garden every spring and fall. Like, I help with the weeds. There's still dirt in my toenails. Like, it's like breathing. I go out there in the pastures. It's something I'm so familiar with. I can find all of the wildflowers I grew up with. But I think in that I'm removed from my community because it's completely different from my community that I've built as an artist, as a person, like in my surrounding area around my home. It's not connected whatsoever, nor do I know how to connect it.
I grew up on a reserve, and I went to residential school for a period of 7 years, although my time there was broken in between, and then my parents returned us. I've walked Saskatchewan for the last 4 years. Now, I missed last year. And we have covered the territory from Murlock, Saskatchewan to Gravelburg. And that's about a 70-mile walk. We've covered from grasslands to Cypress Hills. And that was another 7-8-day walk. In between that walk from the grasslands, walking across the grasslands, and then driving to the Cypress Lake and camping there, and then walking to the massacre of the Native people at Cypress Hills. So we've walked that. We've also walked from Humble, Saskatchewan to Fort Carlton, and that was 108 miles. I think I'm missing one walk, and I can't remember which one it was. But so we've covered a lot of territory in this province. People walk for the history, okay? European settlers walk for the history because it's marked by the RCMP trail. And I walk for the pure pleasure of it. I don't walk to remember history because I would just get mad. I get really angry with that. But I come from a family of walkers on the land. My father was a great hunter, as both my brothers were. So I'm very, very in touch with the land. I walk every day on our, we have 360 acres of land, so it's a good walk. So I'm very much in tune and in love with the land, and I've got great respect for the environment. And I'm sad for people who live in on concrete, because they're out of touch with the spiritual and emotional essence of the land and what industry is doing to it. So those are my thoughts around land.
That's great.
I don't really feel connected to the land. But ultimately we are connected to the land because we come from the land. And through my teachings and my culture, like, it's Mother Earth. She gave birth to us as humans to live here and be here. And I guess the only thing when I really feel connected to the land, the way I can really connect to the land is like, it's whenever you like get that really like lonely feeling, you know, that feeling where you kind of just exist where you are and there's nothing else out of it, you know. You can always just lay down and like Mother will hold you on the grass, you know. So that's the way to look at connection. But like you said, we don't really walk. Like we build these structures. We're disconnected from the land.
It's also a bigger question. Like I worked on farms when I was in high school Every summer, my brother and I were sent out and worked on farms. And there's a relationship with the land, but it's, in a sense, with a specific purpose. So it's like, so the land is controlled. Like, there's an intention with all of that land. And yet, when you look out over the prairie and you're just looking at it, to me, it's amazing just to see it as it is, without a purpose, just its own, whatever purpose it has in and of itself. It's a different feeling than relating to it in an economic way.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a big disconnection in the line when you mention it that way. Because you're not looking at the land, as like you said, breathing. You're looking at the land as what it can do for you, and mm-hmm. what you can get from the land. You're looking at it as a commodity. You're not looking at it as the life.
It's only, yeah, it's living, it's a living thing in and of itself. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Part of what I hear then in that is that it's some of what we're experiencing in terms of connection specifically to land is it's both the material constructs that are keeping us, but there's also kind of these conceptual constructs mm-hmm. of how we view land
right.
as a resource or a commodity. Which is different from seeing it as a living thing or as something that has its own existence that, apart from what I intend about the
right.
purpose of it.
Yeah. Well, land, using the term broadly, meaning, you know, the natural environment,
yeah.
supports everything in the world. I mean, it yeah. is the giver of life to everything.
Yeah.
And I think we have to start looking at a much more holistic
yeah.
in a much more holistic way about what that means to us.
Yeah, because it's kind of weird, like, the land gave birth to us living things, you know, like us living things. But then we looked at the land like it's not alive, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
You see, for me, land, like my connection to land and the meaning of land is, I see Canada as the land of opportunities. It's like mm-hmm. the land that opens the doors to many people who are trying to build a new life. And meanwhile, I build a new life in here. Also, it comes with learning about it, and learning the connection with the culture and ancestors. And to me, meanwhile, I've been finding similarities between indigenous culture and my own culture, like related to family and the connections to being a very collective culture. I also see the differences and start to understand the meaning of my own land, where I come from, and how I can be disconnected to depending on my upbringings. And I see it's, you know, those, it can be problematic in here too, right? You're born in here, like you walk on sidewalks, like you said, but like what exactly means is for me, Canada is a land that, you know, I came here to build a new life. So I'm not a settler, but I'm also benefiting from a land that has been, you know, settled before, and I'm the product of colonization where I come from. So it's just like it has many meanings. And now that I'm having, like, I have my own family, I'm starting to understand my relationship with indigenous culture, because my kid has indigenous background. She's Métis, so I'm like, how do I connect my own meaning of land in from where I come from with the meaning here in Canada, with their culture and, you know, the mixture of every culture, and trying to understand everything more and how I can also connect it with my own upbringing.
Julie, can I ask, would you say that you have a better appreciation of the land that you come from by being distant from it? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Like, where I come from, like, I'm a mix. We're like mestizo, so yeah. Which is, I think it's similar to Métis, like where we're just, yeah, the mix of Spaniards and indigenous and black, all in one. That's, I think, the majority in Latin America. So I never grew up having that disadvantage because we're the majority. Then moving here, to me, was like, oh, wait, I belong to a different group, you know, it's like the majority, the white ones, and the people of color, and everyone. So it's just that I understood that I had privilege, and I never knew that, and now moving here, I started to understand that there's a lot of discrimination and disadvantages, systemic and everything, that I never was aware I come from. So then that made me understand, you know, the problems that we have in my own land by coming into a new land and, yeah, and being part of that disadvantaged group.
I think I have always looked for belonging or connection with communities of people wherever I've lived, but haven't necessarily seen the land itself as something to be connected to, unless there was like, oh, when I lived in the Calgary area, I loved going camping in Kananaskis, like the beauty of the mountains, or when I lived in Vancouver, this beach, or Lighthouse Park, or, you know, like there are these places that were so beautiful, I'd love to go there as a, you know, place to go camping, or, you know. And I, at the same time, I've, like, through Kirsten, my wife's extended family, and her farming background, I've sort of, like, become connected to their land in a way that now feels like home to me. And I remember when I was like first, when I forget if we were engaged already or we were dating, I was working on the farm for my father-in-law and had read some interesting books about organic farming versus conventional farming and thought these were really good ideas, you know, and my father-in-law like was like, you think I'm not caring for the land for long term? Like, you think I don't love this land? I don't see this land as a commodity. This is like, I want seven generations to be able to farm this land. And if I'm treating it in a way that it will continue to be good for, not just for producing crops, but also for wildlife. And they were part of this Buck for Wildlife program that intentionally sets aside a significant portion of land for wetlands and whatnot. And it was kind of like, oh, right, okay, I need to listen more than I talk sometimes, you know.
Because you read a book.
Because I read a book, exactly, you know, yeah. Hey, it's a great idea to share, you know. I would say over the last recent years, and it's maybe more of an aspirational goal, but I think the, like, finding the gifts in the land where I am and say like in the gardens that Kirsten can't help but make in our yard and every year it's like, I think we should turn that into a garden too. And it's like the whole, like we need to have some grass for our kids, you know, and no, it's all going to be garden, you know, she's anyway, she's a farm girl, you know, but it's not as like let's get something from this, you know. It's like, let's dig in the dirt and feel the goodness of it and enjoy the taste of these tomatoes and look at, you know, had bees in our yard that our friends were keeping. And I guess I feel like there's a lot more to grow in that, but I feel much more rooted here on the Saskatchewan prairies and the South Saskatchewan River Valley and where I think I used to think about, well, okay, I'm connected to these people and I'd hate to lose this community if I had to move. Whereas now I feel like I don't want to leave this place and the people and I don't know. That's different for me from past years.
So not to shut anything down, and you're welcome to jump in on anything we've shared, but one last question to kind of get us thinking, and this is the long one, but we've done it, we've worded it carefully, so this is the one. Some elders understand the spirit of treaty as adoption, which we explore in this play, as a good way to welcome strangers as family, as all our relations. Yet, we must admit we've not fulfilled these relationships across these lands called Canada. And in this series, We Treaty People, we kind of see an unfinished declaration inviting all of us forward to lean into treaty relationships as one of the many paths toward reconciliation. So with all that said, how has telling this story affected the way, the different ways that you see other people? Or what is the phrase, all my relations, mean to you?
Well, a couple things, like we are all treaty people. A European signed a treaty with our people, but it's not respected. And that angers me, actually, because there's treaties with different countries and they respect those treaties. If they didn't, there'd be a war. You know, there's agreements between provinces, between the government and the rest of the provinces. And that's kind of like a treaty and that's respected. What about our treaty? You know, so for that. And the other I found interesting was the idea of adoption. I have never thought of adopting the settlers into this country. So that was a new twist for me. But in our language, the men will call each other Joams. And I'm not exactly sure what the translation is. I would have to ask, but it is a greeting like a relative. The perception is that we are all related and we're all blood relatives because we all come from the stars, and even European scientists claim that. When I was in Ottawa that day I returned, they asked me about truth and reconciliation and the greeting. And I paused and I said, you know, I don't mind people acknowledging the land or where the people are from. My response always is, now give it back to us. A hard call, but it's possible to expand. Like, my people are buying back their own land, for crying out loud. You know, excuse me, there's something wrong with that picture. If the people are saying that acknowledgement, are they living it? Are they living it with you and I, with each other? Are they inviting each other out for dinner to make those, I don't like the word bridging, but to make those that relationship happen immediate? Like, let's go out for lunch. Let's, you know, I mean, I love the idea that you folks have had your Bannock gathering, for example. That ought to be happening all the time. White men and white women and all of these other visitors ought to be coming to our powwows, to our feasts, to our plays, to our poetry readings, to our, you know, all of that. When I go to a festival, and the other native poets will say, I'm the only brown face there. And with our poetry festivals here in Saskatoon, put by a Saucy, I've seen one white face at our poetry festivals. It's those things that we need to occur. The other thing is, and I witnessed this, I'm in a mixed relationship, my husband's wife. I don't have an issue talking to everybody and anybody, okay? And I will strike up a conversation. It doesn't matter who. Occasionally, I have resistance. My other side of the family, and my kids are super, like they're universal people. What I observe with white people is that they're not able to make those kind of connections with the outsider or what they perceive as us as the outsider, you know, which I always find interesting. Like, what is the matter with you folks, you know, is my response to that. So, yeah, we have to be much more inviting to, I mean, we all have busy lives. I know my life has been almost unmanageable these last couple of years. But I work at it, you know, I work at it. And that's what matters. You've got to work at it.
Yeah, that's hard to put into words. I suppose it removes the us, them, moves towards removing the us, them kind of concept. That there is, in fact, people are people. And if they are my relations, then I must treat them as I would treat someone in my own immediate family.
It's interesting, like, that question makes me think, well, what you said, we have to re-examine the way we're going about things, because, you know, we're creatures of routine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then we've just been routinely not educating the population on what a treaty right is. Even reading that play was difficult at times, because a lot of these views on treaty rights and the views on what it was, because they're like talking points, you know, which touches back to the land being a commodity and thinking this is the land, this is what it is. Because we never were owners of the land.
Right.
Like, we migrated and moved. And that's a big misunderstanding of, I've been thinking lately about intelligence. To think that we are above a bird or above an ant. I mean, if you're thinking about life in itself and DNA and the whole root of to keep your genetic code going, the smartest way to do that is to become symbiotic with the land you are living on. Not build structures on it, not morph the land, but to live with the land.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at these birds, and like, since they've been around for millions of years, you cannot look at them like they're lesser. You're not intelligent, because they figured out, in order to live the longest here, you have to have a symbiotic nature with it.
Yeah, it's the effect. Like, when people talk of treaty rights, what is the effect of that on me, as opposed to what effect does it have on you? For me, I go, you know, treaty rights, okay, good, fine. What effect does it have on me? I don't even recognize the effect that it has on me.
Yeah, that's the miseducation of it.
Yeah.
Because people don't understand the effect that the treaty right has on you is the fact that you are here in Canada,
right,
working.
Yeah.
You were born here.
And gain the benefits from that.
And you're benefiting. You were living and benefiting on the land. And the part that is hard and tough is the manipulation that the government does through not correcting anything. Like, for instance, it's they're protecting this lie in the most nuanced way, like where you can't say they are, because they would say, well, we're not. Because if they wanted to really take a step forward to show the truth and to reconcile, they would say not one penny of your tax dollars goes to treaty rights. Not one. Mm-hmm. And that is always a massive, massive talking point of the Conservative Party, right? Mm-hmm. Conservative people, liberals, like anybody, they think that they breed this ignorance because it helps them and their war that they're still fighting with us natives.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes truth and reconciliation and treaty rights and that question just fake.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. It's not a thing. It's an idea. It's a veneer, you know.
Right.
It's a veil. It's what you want. But then, to be really honest, it's really cool to see. And I see these young Native people and Native people my age and getting really hyped and excited. And the darkest part of it all is we have to be very careful. And you find out in the play, because the crown could just take away the land and put us back in cages in residential schools. And that sounds far-fetched, but it isn't, because there's kids in cages in Mexico and there's the Uyghur Muslims in China. Stuff is going on today.
Right, yeah.
And it could just happen to us natives. And as much as I believe, you gotta say you wouldn't let that happen. You know?
Well, the fear is real, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Mm-hmm. I didn't smoke. I was kidding.
Yeah, it's real. It's people talk about the politeness of Canadian society. You know, Canadian society, and we say sorry all the time, right? And like,
but then do we say sorry as we turn the key in the lock?
It's kind of
I'm so sorry about this.
Our sorry holds as much weight as the truth and reconciliation idea itself. Like, it's something to say.
If you're going to perform an action you need to be sorry for, maybe you shouldn't be performing that action.
Yeah, and you can see that blatantly. when those commercial fishermen looted and burned and robbed that fishery for the Mi'kmaq treaty rights, the RSMP stood by, and this is why we have to be careful, because it was just being filmed and watched.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then some people pulled down John A. McDonald's statue. The law is the law, as Trudeau said, the next day. Which is big, you know, countrywide speech. Conservative Party just, oh, you can't do this, the law's up. Where was the law? Just last week. But then that fuels ignorance and hate. And they don't properly educate what a treaty right is and how you guys are treated, how we are treated, what this land is to us. Which is why I respect the diligence you took and learning, taking
part. Which puts the onus, I mean, as an example, that puts the onus on us to learn it. If we're not being taught it, we need to learn it.
True, yeah, and that's the responsibility.
All I can say is that like my kid who's in kindergarten honestly knows more than I do at times about it, because the school he goes to, they tell him about things, and he's telling me about, we had a conversation in the car today about treaties being promises because of the treaty belts from a show he was watching, and so like he's learning things. So I feel like if there's something there, that there is some education starting. I know it's a five-year-old, what does that matter? But to me it does. It's because it's like, this is how you can move forward. It shows me that there is progress. Because he was, he's got Cree a couple times a week. And so he knows a couple of Cree words. And he's like, how come you don't know it, Dad? And I was like, oh. I was like, honestly? And I'm honest with him. I'm like, honestly, when I was a kid, nobody cared. And I said that. And it's good that like people are trying to learn and care more and treat each other better. And it gives me this kind of, like, a bit of hope to say that. Like, at least if he cares and I care, and my house cares, maybe there's something to it.
But, you know, that goes back to one of the questions earlier about community. It's like, your house, the people in your house care. It's one house, one yard, a little fence, a dog. But that still makes a difference. It has to, otherwise there is no hope if that one person can't make a difference. There's a lot of one people that care and want to see that change. Mm-hmm. If it were zero, we're doomed. But it's not. There's a lot. There's more steps that need to be taken. And then, like, the kids, the next generation, they're going to be taking more steps than we knew possible. Because we're still learning. We're still figuring it out, what this treaty means for us.
Yeah, like you said, that the shift from us and them, whoever your us is, right? We all come from different communities and different kind of cultural backgrounds, but I know for me, this like adoption image, it makes the all my relations feels like, I thought I used to see that phrase like, oh, that's a really cool Indigenous idea about like all the, I thought it was mostly about all the humans, right? Yeah, like we're all, oh, it's actually all of the animals and it's actually also the earth, and it's everything that is we're related to, and I totally like resonate with that in terms of even like if creator, Mother Earth, like we're relatives, but adoption as like, no, we're actually family. We're not just like, yeah, we're related because we're like part of the same species or we're all part of the same ecosystem. It's like, but if we're actually family, like it doesn't, I'm not like, I can't be let off the hook. It's one thing is like, well, those people, them, or like, well, those people need to, they're trying to find their rights and they're fighting, and that's good. But it's totally different if it's like my cousins or That's my auntie, mm-hmm. who went through residential school. Yeah. Not like those people or something, you know. And my kids too are like they're all in grade 9 to grade 5 right now. But yeah. It's been a gift to see them learning more of the real history. And like on the Orange Shirt Day, we were at the walk and the celebration commemoration down at Victoria Park, and afterwards we were walking back to the car, and my son asked me, I guess he said I love the powwow drums. I'm like, I did too. Like I love it. And he was like my band teacher was saying, like, when she grew up just outside of Saskatoon, and she told the class this week, she was like, I never heard powwow drums live until I was already teaching high school. And she was talking about why was that, and you know why. And he was like, I've grown up in drumming. I've gotten to be part of the Indigenous ensemble. And I was like, that's so great that's like, this is just like, this is part of what you know to mean. This is what it means to be in Canada, to be on the, in Saskatchewan. And I was like, I didn't hear powwow drumming live till 2014 myself. He was like, what? I was like, yeah, I went to Wanuskewin to powwow. It was like my first time, and it's very foreign to me. But now it's like, I love it. I want to learn to play it. I'm like, I don't know.
I want to talk about a first experience I had too on an Orange Shirt Day. My wife and I were taking part in the walk downtown. This is 2 or 3 years ago, and we were biking on our way home, and I had the first racist epithets thrown in my direction. I've never had comment before because, you know, I'm a white guy, but because we were wearing orange shirts, these guys riding by in a truck were going, oh, nice shirt you got, you pig, and I was getting all of, my wife and I were getting all of this nonsense, and I just went, holy crap. And I can't imagine what it would be like if we didn't have white faces. It's just the shirts that got the comment. I just went, this is crazy, because I was pissed. I was very, very upset, as was my wife. But that's the first time anyone's ever thrown a racist stone at me.
You see, honor for that, like, because now, like you said, like, because me, in my education, everyone my age, I'm 39, so everyone my age and older has been taught what I was taught in school, which was the Europeans discovered Canada, came here, found us savages, went to war with us, obliterated us, and then took pity on us and gave us our treaty rights. Mm-hmm. So that's the history I was taught in school. It's probably a lot of the world. And it's good to see that they're talking now, but then it's almost like the cynical part of me, is it going to create a divide?
A divide where?
Like between the younger people and the older ones.
I mean, there is now. Sure, I mean, we play a game. we play a game with my family at holidays, which is how long until someone says something irredeemable, like, and it's like, grandma. And then you got to be like, and I have to educate my grandma. So there is a divide, right? And the divide, it happens. It's like, it's the old guard at times. And it is within each unit, right? And that where that divide is, sometimes it isn't there. It's not there with my wife's family, right? Like, they're all on the same page. Right. I come from a different stock of Canadian.
I think generally, though, that the change is causing a great deal of tension. Sure. And we are experiencing that tension virtually, well, internationally. It's happening everywhere. Change is very difficult for some people.
And that's why I believe in me being Indigenous and artist, it kind of sucks. Because I do have a responsibility. And I kind of don't want that. I just like to be known as an artist instead of an Indigenous artist. But everywhere I am labeled.
Right.
Yeah.
you know, everything is an indigenous singer, an indigenous writer, an indigenous actor. I'm not just a singer, I'm not just a writer, I'm not just an actor. I'm indigenous. Yeah. And it's really strange because it's backwards but forwards. Putting labels on people is what caused a lot of divide. Yeah. But then here we are putting labels on people to make it better.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Wow. Mm-hmm.
So it's complicated. We have no answers. We have lots of questions.
But we still have responsibilities.
Yeah. And maybe that's the biggest thing that I'm to identify something I'm hearing is as we hear and are willing to hear more of the truth and lean in when these hard tensions emerge, which is some of what I think we've discovered in a lot of the conversations we've had here, and some of what Yvette has encouraged us is when the conversation is hard or there's something that's it's like, don't lean back, which is our tendency, but lean in so that you can hear across that difference. And the more that we're willing to do that and be uncomfortable when we've been used to being comfortable and not get racist stuff thrown at us, the further we can go in understanding each other across difference and not just have to label and let that be the comfortable way I understand, but can actually find a way to live together in a place. And so that notion of all my relations doesn't remain an abstraction, but it's concretely enacted here with the people in the room, with the land that I'm on.
I was going to say, it was very interesting what you said, Lance, about the labeling, because my father-in-law grew up hiding his indigenous status because of, you know, embarrassment and shame. Mm-hmm. And now he's just so proud and he just screams it out loud. And then me as an outsider, I always find it interesting because I'm like, well, how are you trying to amend all those, you know, all those things in the family? And it's just this is a divide in the family on that side where like some of them are like, well, you hid it for so long. Like, what makes you think now you want to carry the label so high? And then the other side of the family is like, whoa, we are amending our mistakes. And it's interesting how you grew up with a label and you're like, why do I have to have a label? Meanwhile, them, they're like, we want the label now. So it's very complicated.
It's weird.
So I just sit there and watch and trying to understand how they're like, just like, I want the label. And the other ones are like, no, I don't. That's okay. You know, live without a label. It's true.
I suppose it's a personal, if that's a choice that you make, that's your choice, mm-hmm. so long as somebody else isn't making a choice for you.
And then touch on what you said about you go to these family dinners and you're at a point where it's like, well, how long is it going to be till someone says something irredeemable? And I guess that's like a responsibility of you as an individual. Obviously, you're not going to correct your grandma. She's like so stuck in her ways.
Sometimes we do. Yeah. We had a great conversation about residential schools, and she made some progress, which will be undone by other people or other family members. But like, she's my one where I'm like, I bet I can. She's 88. I think we can get her. And she's not. She watches CBC News, she doesn't know how computers work. So she's still savable as far as I'm concerned. Like, she doesn't have a Facebook to spew hate.
And, like, I guess
there's hope.
And there's the responsibility, I guess, for you would be to explain to the younger kids in your family that that is not a correct way of thinking.
Explain
why it is and why it is the way it is. Mm-hmm. That'd be, like, that's a responsibility that someone themselves can take on their own. Make it a better place for everybody.
Yeah. Do want to respect everyone's time. Are there any final thoughts of burning things that have kind of popped out for anybody?
I was thinking about your thing about, well, but one person, one family. I don't know if you're familiar with Bowen family system theory. You can look it up. It's worth looking at, though. But like in a family system, and there's anxiety, and there's like, people try to triangulate other people to reduce the anxiety and make the tension go away. And it just takes one person to say, no, actually, I'm going to be true to myself and be differentiated, but still be in relationship and stay connected to you. and be a calming, non-anxious presence in the midst of other people's anxiety and conflict, that one person can really turn down the heat in the family system and like offer a way out of this like stuckness. We have to play these roles and everybody tries to just keep the tension away. And I don't know how that works in terms of a large family like a nation, but if we're all family, you know, you would try to stay in relationship and work it out.
Well, so the family, as my thought behind it is always, you don't have to like them. You don't have to like mm-hmm. your family, but you're supposed to love them because there's that connection. And I think that's, I always had this thing where it was like, well, no one else can beat up my brother except for me because he's my brother.
Right? That's how you ruled your family.
Yeah. and I want that, you know, that's, I think that's, like, if we are all a family, because we're all a family, you don't have to like each other, but we do have to at least, like, love each other.
Yeah. That's just like kids. Sometimes you love your kid, but sometimes you don't have to like your kid.
Oh, no. Yeah.
It's good that you know that now.
Especially when they're teething.
I can't wait for teenagers to hear.
There's days you look at that 6-month-old, you're like, pay rent.
Well, thanks, everybody.
Yeah.
I think it's to honor the time and we've had. I thank you all. It's been great to chat. It's great to see this work come to realization. And, thanks for being part of the final show for We Treat People.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
We Treat People is a production of Burnt Thicket Theatre.
Support our work with a donation and learn more about the artists at burntthicket.com.
And check out our website or the episode description for links to other great learning resources.
Special thanks go to the Canada Council for making this project possible.
And to our season sponsors, Surecom Industries and SK Arts. This work was gratefully created on Treaty 6 territory and on the traditional homeland of the Métis.